Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We are so glad that you are here. We've got a lot of folks who are traveling. We've hit those dog days of summer. And my encouragement to you is look around and do a couple of things. If you see an unfamiliar face, a new face, take the risk of introducing yourself or reintroducing yourself if that's the case. That's okay. Just let the folks around you know that you notice them and you want to get to know them. But it's also time to take a look around, and if there's someone that you don't see or you haven't seen for a while, give them a call, shoot them a text, send them a message and let them know that they're missed and they too are noticed and that you're thinking about them. It is important to continue to stay connected as a body, even during a time when we are spread out as a body. Well, did you ever have songs while you were growing up? Could be songs on the radio, could be songs that we sang in church, that you always sang them a certain way because that's how you heard them, and then eventually, later in life, you realized you were singing the wrong words all along. You didn't know exactly what you were saying, or maybe you were saying it and you were saying the right words, but you didn't understand what you were saying. How many of you as kids either misunderstood or you understood, but you couldn't help but giggle every time we sang the song, "Up from the Grave He Arose," because what you heard was gravy, not grave he. So it was low in the gravy lay, up from the gravy. A lot of giggles going on. Or another old one, we don't sing that much anymore, "I Come to the Garden Alone," and you get to the chorus and you wonder, who is this Andy we keep talking about? Because every verse starts with, "Andy walks with me, Andy talks with me, Andy tells me I am his own." And there's one kid in the youth group named Andy, and he's given one of these every time. He's like, "This is my song." Well, there were a lot of songs, there were quite a few songs, at least for me, that I genuinely had confusion about. One was an oldie, I don't know how goodie, because it's not considered classic, but it was the song, "Have You Seen Jesus, My Lord?" You remember that song? "He's Here in Plain View." Well, I grew up in Amarillo, Texas, until I was 8 years old. About an hour away, also in the plains of West Texas, is a town called Plainview. And that song confused me to no end when we sang it, because every time we got to that part, "He's in Plainview," I wondered, well, what are we doing here? He's like an hour away. Let's hit the road. I mean, Jesus is here. Let's get down there. Let's head to Plainview. Or there was a song, and my mom is here, and she can verify I'm not making this up. You know the song, "Just a Little Talk with Jesus"? Well, there is a part of the song that I don't know how any kid is expected to know what you're saying anyway, where you get to the part that says, "Now when you feel a little prayerful yearning." Now, I didn't know what a prayerful yearning was as a kid, and I didn't know that that's what was said, and so I sang what I thought they said, and what I thought we were singing was, "Now when you feel a little prayer for Ernie," as in this guy right here. That's what I was singing, "When you feel a little prayer for Ernie." And growing up with the name Bert, you can imagine why Ernie might be on my mind. And when they finally pointed out that I was wrong, I liked my version better. I didn't know what a prayerful yearning was, but I knew who that guy was. And so Ernie made it into quite a few of my songs growing up. Well, there's two that we sang that I think were a source of confusion for a variety of people that we sang this morning. One is a beautiful song, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," and it's one that's sort of surged in popularity again. But when you get to verse 2, how many people sing the opening line, "Here I raise my Ebenezer." And they're looking around like, did someone hand out Ebenezers this morning when we were coming in and I didn't get an Ebenezer? I don't have an Ebenezer to raise. Do you have an Ebenezer to raise? I didn't know what an Ebenezer was. I knew what an Ebenezer Scrooge was, but I didn't know what an Ebenezer was. I didn't know it was a reference to a story from the prophet Samuel, who is celebrating a God who is there in a mighty way, who continues to show up, to deliver, to help. And so he names this monument, this stone of help, which is what literally an Ebenezer means. He erected this monument to remember the God who shows up, the God of help. And it's a song we sang just before the sermon, which is a Church of Christ staple. Our God, He is alive. And it's a beautiful song, and I always loved that song growing up. And I sang it with enthusiasm, as we did before I got up on the stage. But I was always confused. And I'm not sure that I admitted this to other people, but I was always confused because throughout the whole song, we were celebrating the goodness of God and the power of God and the majesty of God. So why, in the very last verses of the chorus, every time did we switch from singing about God to singing about me? Were any of you confused as a kid when you got to that line? The great I am. It's like we've been singing about God this whole time, and now we're singing about the great I am. And I remember consciously stopping singing right before we got to that line because I didn't know the word blasphemy, but I was pretty sure that that was an inappropriate way to end the song. What is this twist at the end, where we've been singing about God the whole time, but we turn to sing about I am? Well, before I get to the origin of that, which many of you are familiar with, although maybe you've forgotten, I want to tell you that as we end our series in the I Am sayings of Jesus in the Gospel of John, we've looked at a variety of sayings in which Jesus starts with that saying, I am, in Greek, ego and me, but then it is followed by a description, the bread of life, the way, the truth, and the life, the resurrection and the life. I'm the vine, you are the branches, I'm the good shepherd, I am the sheep, the gate for the sheep. But there's a larger claim that's taking place in the gospel of John, a larger claim that Jesus is making that shows up in subtle ways, in ways that are kind of sly and almost secretive, where he says that phrase, ego a me, and then he just leaves it there. It's not followed by the shepherd or the gate or the way, truth, and life. He just says, ego in me, and then it stops. It hangs in the air. And those who have ears to hear are invited to hear. I am. Now, you may remember the origin story, but if you don't, it happens back in Exodus chapter 3. Exodus starts out in sort of a perilous way where the people of God are enslaved in Egypt. How they got there was through the hand of God, a place of protection, but they'd been there a long time and they had grown to be a strong people and a numerous people. And after a while, the pharaohs, the leaders, had forgotten why they were there and the help that had come from Joseph. And all they saw was this foreign people in their land, and they were afraid. And so they enslaved the Israelites. And it was bitter, and it was hard, and it was cruel, and Israel cried out to God in their slavery, and God heard their cries. And he determined to lead his people out of slavery, and to do so, he called on Moses to be his mouthpiece. And he gave Moses two tasks. He's going to go before Pharaoh and demand the release of the Israelites. Say what I tell you to say. And Pharaoh just happens to be the most powerful man in the ancient world at the time, who commands the most powerful army in the ancient world at the time. So powerful, in fact, that his people thought of him, worshiped him, as if he were a god. That's task number one. You go talk to him and to tell him to let his free labor go. Task number two is you're going to go to your fellow Hebrews and you're going to tell them when it's time to walk away from their masters with their backs heading away from the most powerful army in the world that will soon be chasing them down. And you've got to convince these people that when I say go, it's time to go. And Moses has a few hesitations with this plan. And his first protest sounds like this: who am I to do this? And God says, don't worry about that. I'm going to go with you. I'm going to give you the words. I'm going to be your mouthpiece. To which Moses, in essence, responds, well, since you've mentioned it, then who are you? How can I know that you can do what you say that you can do? How can I tell them that you can do what you can say you can do? Look at Exodus 3:13. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, well, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And this name is not about basic introductions. Hi, I'm Yahweh. Hi, we're Israel. It's about authority. It's about power to back up the talk and accomplish what God is promising. His name reveals his resume, his authority. What can one God do against these powerful, well-known gods of Egypt who seem to have been victorious for so long because Egypt has been on top for so long? What name shall I tell them? Who sent me? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation. Now, I can tell you this name revealed here has launched thousands of theological discussions and debates as to exactly what it means and what the origin is of this word. It seems to be sort of a base root word for being, existence, I am. Sometimes it's translated with a sense of future. I will be who I will be. In Hebrew, it's Yahweh, but some of you know that for faithful Jews then, and some even now, they don't say the name. They substitute another name for God. In fact, there's little markers in the Hebrew Bible that when they get to that name, it's a reminder. We don't say that name. We say another name because this name is so sacred. It's so holy. It's so special to us. This is the name that shows up thousands of times in the Old Testament. And it's a name that both reveals and yet there is mystery behind it. He is the ground of being. He's not just the God of the fathers of the past, although he is that, but he is the God of the present and the future for Israel. I am. He always was, and he always is, and he always will be. He's not defined by another. I am who I am. And he's not limited by another. I am who I am. And there's no comparison between this God and other gods. Even when it seems the gods of Egypt have the upper hand, no, I am. I am. I was, and I will be. I am. This God is the very author of life. I am. If they ask you my name, who sent me? You tell them this. I am. So back to Jesus in John. We've heard all of these times when he's used this word in Greek, ego and me, these two words, I am the bread of life. I am the shepherd, the good shepherd. I am the way and the truth and the life. But there are several times when it just kind of stops. He leaves it there. He leaves it hanging. And sometimes translators of the Bible don't exactly know how to translate it, because in Greek we could just translate it I am, or you could go ahead and throw something on at the end. I am he. I'm the one. And maybe if we didn't have the larger context of who Jesus is claiming to be, we might add that extra. But when you see it in the midst of the story, then you hear it. The bell is rung all the way back from Exodus 3. So that those who have ears to hear say, did he just say what we thought he said? Did he just claim what it sounds like he claimed? Is he saying who we think he's saying? John 4:25, the woman at the well said, I know that Messiah called Christ is coming. And when he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I, the one speaking to you, I am. Did he just... When Jesus is walking across the water and the disciples are terrified, he reassures them and says, I am. Don't be afraid. Did he just? After warning his disciples of Judas's betrayal, Jesus says in 13:19, I'm telling you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe that I am. Did you? When a group of religious leaders and soldiers go looking for Jesus in the garden, Jesus asks, who is it that you want? Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. I am, Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. And when Jesus said, I am, they drew back and fell to the ground. Did he just? In chapter 8, Jesus is in the middle of a long argument with religious leaders, and they're questioning his credentials. Who do you think you are? By what authority do you say these things? Who gives you the right to teach the way that you do? And my favorite question that they ask him is this, verse 48. Aren't we right in saying that you're a Samaritan and demon possessed? Now, that's a real burn in the ancient world, by the way, in case you didn't pick up on that. We were trying to decide if you're a hated, traitorous, half-breed group of people or the spawn of Satan. And then we decided, why choose? We see a little bit of both in you. No, Jesus says throughout, he's claiming his connection to the Father. I only say what the Father tells me to say. I only do what the Father tells me to do. I have come from the Father, and to the Father I'll return. You keep thinking that you are close with the Father because of your connection to Abraham. So let me just say this, 8:56, Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. To which they reply, how can you claim that you've seen Abraham? You're not even 50 years old. It's kind of a round number that they pick. It's not suggesting he was nearing that, but there's no way you're old enough to make this claim. To which Jesus says in 58, I tell you the truth. Before Abraham was born, I am. And that's a drop the mic moment and just walk off the stage. Did he just say? And at that point, they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus was hidden from them and he left the temple. Even at a young age, when we sang, Our God, He is alive, I didn't know the idea of blasphemy, but I understood, because I misunderstood that song, that to sing that about myself was a big problem. Unless it just happens to be true. Unless, of course, Jesus is who he says he is. Unless he is God. Unless he is the I am. Which is what John has told us from the very first verses of the gospel. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. But John also informed us from the very opening verses that for some, when they encounter the Word, the light goes off. And for some, they remain in the dark. Some will understand it, and some don't understand it. Some will receive him. He came to that which was his own, but some don't receive him. And at times, we could simply describe Jesus through other descriptions that he reveals and he shows through the gospel. He is a good teacher and a benevolent leader and a kind person to the outsider and a humble servant to his own. But there is a point in which we have to wrestle with the deeper claim that runs all throughout the gospel, that he is that, but he's so much more than that. Some of you may remember the great line from C.S. Lewis, often quoted, at some point you have to decide. When you take all of the claims of Jesus, either he is a liar or he's a lunatic, or he's Lord. He is who he says he is. I am who I am. I am the great I am. We don't just take a few lessons from him. We don't just simply admire him. He's not just a good moral example. He is that, but he's so much more. He is the source of life overflowing. He is the light for our path. He is daily bread. He is resurrection. He is the way to the Father. He's the one who knows us and calls us by name, and we can know him. We can know his voice. We can attune our ears when he calls for us, because he's the source of genuine hope and comfort. Because he is who he says he is, he can give purpose in a meaningless or aimless existence. He can really bring healing in our struggling relationships. He can really bring wholeness in our messed up lives. He can really bring peace and justice and make our fractured world whole again. Because he's teacher and leader and moral compass and role model and lover of the outsider and defender of the oppressed and feeder of the hungry, but he's more than that. He has always been more than that. And our call is to grab onto it all. He's not just a good example. Someone to give us a few tips for a better life. He is the one to whom we surrender all of life every day, because he is the I am.